Good afternoon. My lesson's entitled Church Finances, and I thought it would be appropriate to read the questions that were asked because that's basically the outline, the way I'd like to address the subject. First question, how did the early church or the first century church use their finances versus the church today? What is the church's responsibility to help its own financially? Is it appropriate in financial support for members in need or for church workers to be held accountable for the use of church funds? What is our responsibility to help in immediate situations, but also to train those in need in the handling of their finances? Should allowance of training and advice be a prerequisite of assistance? Is bankruptcy okay for a Christian? How far should the church go to keep someone out of bankruptcy? You remember when the church first began on the day of Pentecost? It tells us in Acts, the second chapter, beginning in verse 41, then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them. Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods, and divided them among all, as anyone had need. So, continuing daily from house to house, with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, they ate their food with gladness and simplicity of heart, praising God, and had favor with all people. And the Lord added to the church daily those who were being saved. Then if you go over to the fourth chapter, and verse 32, this idea is stated again. Acts 4 and verse 32, now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. And with great power the apostles gave witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Nor was there any one among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them, and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as anyone had need. Why do you suppose the early church was like this? Why do you suppose the brethren did this? It said that there were thousands of people gathered together, and there was a need. And so people that were in the area that had possessions, that had lands, that had a house, sold it and gave it to the apostles so that the apostles then could distribute it to the people that had need. So we can see right away that the early church used proceeds that were given to the new church for the benefit of the members. And it was distributed by the apostles, and apparently the apostles didn't do it all themselves. They gave it to other people because that's why they said that when the Hellenistic Jews were being neglected in the daily ministration, he said, it's not for us that are preaching the gospel to do this work. Appoint fine men that you feel are of good character, have full of faith and wisdom. Let them take care of this. Apparently whoever the apostles had do this weren't doing the job carefully enough. In fact, were probably being a little parochial and taking care only of their own and not caring for those Hellenistic Jews. But the church used its funds in this day to help people. And right away there became a problem. You remember the story of Ananias and Sapphira? It's interesting there in the fifth chapter the way it's described, because it says, and Ananias sold a possession. A possession. And he kept back part of the proceeds, his wife also being aware of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back part of the price of the land for yourself? While it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own hands? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. The problem was not that Ananias had kept back part of the property. The Apostle Peter says, why have you lied? Why did you say that you sold it for so much? They wanted the credit. They didn't want to go completely through but they wanted the credit for selling the land and say, here, I just gave everything to the Lord. It's all here. Here it is. And in fact, it was a lie. And he said, you have not lied to men, but to God. You've lied to the Holy Spirit. And so Ananias and Sapphira both lost their life because of this lie. Not because they hadn't sold everything. The apostle does not chastise Ananias and Sapphira for not selling everything they had. He's chastening him because he was lying to the church. He was lying to the Lord. He said, here, I gave everything, and he wants the credit. And in fact, that's not what he had done. The point is, whether or not they wanted to sell the property was up to them. Whether or not they were going to sell all their houses, everything they owned, and give it, it was up to them. It was in their hands. It was under their control. And we should not think that the start of the early church was a time where, if you talk about an ideal situation for the church, that we have this sense of everybody has everything completely in common. Because that's not how the church continued on. You remember what the apostle said, charge those that are rich in this world not to be haughty. High-minded. He didn't say sell everything. God doesn't say give everything away. Instead, he says to help your neighbor. Be ready to distribute, but he doesn't say sell everything. The point is, these large amount of funds that were given were needed, but they were given fully, willingly to the church. The same kind of thing had happened back in Exodus, the 35th chapter, whenever they were building, you remember, building the tabernacle? And Moses says, here, if you have a willing mind, give to this building here of the tabernacle. And so the people began to give. And in the 36th chapter, towards the end of the chapter, we find that Moses has to tell the people, stop. It's enough. We saw the same kind of thing whenever we had 9/11, didn't we? The people that were here in the country are stricken in heart, and they just gave to the point where they said, it's enough. We don't need any more. They filled buildings with charitable giving. And that's what the brethren did here. Because this was a time when Peter had just preached, and what's it say? Men were cut to the heart. It was a time of joy because the church was starting. There was great opportunity, but it was also a time of grief because they realized what had happened. Jesus Christ had been crucified, and they hadn't done anything to stop it. They had, in effect, been participating in it. It says they were cut to the heart. Men and brethren, what shall we do? And they, of a ready mind and of a willing heart, began to grow and develop and preach and teach, but give to the point where they said, here, take this. And haven't you seen this happen before? There's a problem in a community. What do people do? What can I do? What can I give? How can I help? And usually the way we help is by giving something to people, funds of some kind. Funds were used to meet immediate needs of the church. In 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, and verse 3, it says, honor widows who are widows indeed. And then in the 16th verse, if any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may be relieving those who are really widows. The early church then supported widows that met a qualification of being truly needy. Had no assistance whatsoever. They didn't have any family. They didn't have any resources. And they also had been proven to be faithful members. These widows had a need, and the early church supported them. The early church also supported, and this has been mentioned a few times already just today, the early church mentioned or supported needy saints in other areas. In Acts, the 11th chapter, Agabus gets up and he says there's going to be a famine throughout the world. And so the disciples, each according to his ability, Acts 11:29, disciples, each according to his own ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. This they also did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Romans 15, verse 25. And now I go to Jerusalem, ministering to the saints, For it pleased Macedonia and Achaia well to make a certain contribution for the poor of the saints who are in Jerusalem. For it pleased them well, and their debtors they are, for if in their spiritual things the nations did participate, they ought also in the fleshly things to minister to them. 1 Corinthians 16:1. As in concerning the collection that is for the saints, as I directed to the assemblies of Galatia, so also do ye. On every first day of the week, let each one of you lay by him, treasuring up whatever he may have prospered, that when I may come, collections may not be made. And whenever I come, whomever you may prove through letters, these I will send to carry your favor to Jerusalem. They were helping poor saints outside of their area. They had already, we've seen, they've helped brethren locally. They helped widows that were in the area. And they helped people that are outside. Further, Galatians, the 6th chapter, verse 6. Let him who has taught the word share in all good things with him also who teaches. 1 Corinthians 9:14-15. Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. 1 Timothy 5:17. Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. And so we find the early church again. They gave to the immediate needs of brethren in the congregation in the area around. They gave immediate needs to those that were not local but had heard of the need elsewhere, and they gave willingly. They also support the widows that are in the congregation, and apparently this was something that went on full time. This was something that was done in full support. They didn't have any other resources, and so the church carried them completely financially. We find that they support men that are preaching the gospel, and they devote funds to those that are elders that preach the gospel, laboring in the word, and said they are worthy of double honor. Excuse me. And so the church's funds then were used in this way. Now, let me ask you something. The money that was given willingly. But once the money passed out of the hands of those that gave the money, and it goes into the treasury of the congregation, has that money changed in character at all? Do you believe that once the money goes from my hands to the collection plate, has it gained any kind of spiritual significance? The money that is in the church's treasury is the Lord's money. But so is the money that's in your wallet and in your purse right now. Everything that is in the world, all of the money, all of the things, all of the funds, belong to the Lord. And so the money that's in the local congregation, while it's the Lord's, it's up to the local congregation and their leadership as to how it ought to be spent. It's not something that anyone else can mention or anyone else can tell or dictate. In this lesson today, I don't know how many congregations are represented here. But within your local congregation, how the money is spent is entirely up to that local congregation. Let's say there are guidelines in the New Testament where it talks about how it was spent. It's spent for the immediate needs of the brethren. It's spent for those poor widows. It's spent for the brethren that are preaching the gospel. It's spent for brethren that are elders that are just doing that and nothing else. What's the difference between the way it was done then and now? The only thing I can tell is that we have different things perhaps to spend money on than we did before. I don't know that they had tracts. I don't know how many song books were available. I don't know what kind of upkeep they had to have on buildings at that time. But I think that the church today spends this money exactly the same way that the early church did, with perhaps one exception. And I say this because of my own experience only. I don't know. I've got a very limited experience But in the 50 years, and I've not been at Bloomfield 50 years, but I asked one of the elders there, in the 50 years that you've been an elder, how many times has anyone from the local congregation asked for help? He said, once. And I know of that once. It's been fairly recently. I don't know how the situation is in your congregation. Perhaps there have been multiple times brethren have come to the congregation and asked for help. But if you look at 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, where it's talking about the poor widows, the widows are being supported by the local congregation, but only those that have proven themselves. And I will tell you this, that when the congregation at Bloomfield was studying this passage, they spent so much time trying to figure out who would be qualified to be supported by the church, because there were certainly no examples of it. We spent so much time worrying or thinking over this and talking about it that finally one of the sisters piped up and said, you know, if we really ever had a sister that was a widow that needed help, she'd have starved by now. We don't have it figured out. And I say, my experience is a little bit limited. The only other time I've ever heard of anyone coming to a congregation and asking for help was I remember someone coming to a local congregation when I was in college. Someone else came to the congregation's leadership there and said, "No, I think it'd be a fine idea if you gave me a scholarship so I could continue with my studies." I don't think they got the scholarship. I don't know that that's what would qualify as an immediate need. When there's a genuine immediate need, it needs to be met. In James, the 2nd chapter, in verse 15, it says, "If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled,' but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit?" Now, I know that the book, the passage there, is talking about the importance of doing works versus just saying you're going to do something. If you just tell somebody, "Be you warmed and filled," and you know just the words, they don't mean anything. But the illustration itself is also making that point, that if you're going to help somebody, help them. Don't just talk about it, do something. Galatians, the 6th chapter, and verse 10, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith." Do good to everyone, especially those of the household of faith. But you know, the help is for needs. It's not for wants. It's for needs. In 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, in verses 14 and 15, the apostle says, "Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. But I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me. For it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void." And then 1 Thessalonians 2 and 9, "For you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, we preach to you the gospel of God." 2 Thessalonians 3 and 7, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor and toil night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. For even if when we were with you, we commended you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread." Remember this passage there in 1 Timothy about the widows and the need to make sure that the widows were, in fact, widows that qualified for the congregation to carry them? What he's saying here is that if you're needing something, You cannot pay a bill. You just, things are, you're going to lose something. You're going to lose something you need if you cannot pay the bill, that something's going to happen. You could come to the congregation and say, I need help. But that is not something that needs to be or should be the way life is for you. We're supposed to be able to support other people. We're supposed to have something to give to others. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with that he might have something to give to him that has need. The only time the church is really authorized to help someone that's not laboring in the Lord is if they have no other resources whatsoever. This is long term. If it's an immediate need, come and ask for help. The congregation ought to help. But it's not something that ought to be always. And that's why the Apostle Paul was so concerned about this. He says, I labor night and day so that I would never be charged with eating someone else's bread free of charge. I was doing this to show you a good example. The apostle also said in the chapter there, the passage on Timothy, he said about the widows, why they had to be qualified. He said, because if they're young and could work, they will learn to be idle. They will learn in their idleness how it is to not be a Christian. They will be tempted to go away from the Lord. They won't be. Through their what could be their suffering and their what would strengthen them, instead they become weak. You know, if you think about your child, you love them, you see them, they're just starting to take their first steps, and it seems like they fall down all the time. What do? Same thing with bicycles. What do? We let them, I think, you let them fall a few times, and then they learn to walk. You imagine what it would be like, though, if somebody loved their child so much they thought that they were not willing to let them ever fall down, and so here's this little baby, and he's starting to learn to walk, and you just carry him. You just carry him and carry him and carry him. And the more you carry him, the more of a burden it's going to be to them. I don't know if you, all of us have probably held little ones, and you realize how much heavier they seem to be getting. It's like they're putting on weight as you hold them. They get heavier and heavier. And if you just kept holding them, they're going to grow and they're going to get more and more of a burden. Thing is, if we're helping people full time that don't need the help or shouldn't have that help, ought to be out there looking for work themselves, we're not doing them any favors. That pressure, that sense of urgency, that sense of need helps us. Even though it doesn't feel good at the time, it still helps you because that's what makes you get a job. Anybody had the privilege of having a teenager in the house that seems like they're just going to continue to be there for quite a while, and come in from work, and there they are on the couch? Well, you don't say anything to them. Just continue to feed them, take care of them. They're never going to go out and get a job. Why would they want to do that? It's too easy. That work's not fun. Might even not like where you're at. The thing is, if you're working in a job and you don't like it, it's putting food on the table. You need to do something, even if it's what you might think is not up to what you're capable of doing. Doesn't matter. You need finances. And if you're coming to the congregation locally and saying, I can't pay my bills, there's trouble here, and the real reason is because the only jobs that are available are kind of jobs where you're out there and you're working with garbage. I remember one of the elders at Independence, I think he was a garbage man, you can correct me later if I'm wrong. I remembered asking him this, and I said something to him. I was young, and I said, what do garbage men make? And he said, always said, a reasonable salary and all you can eat. So he had a good sense of humor about it. He's a good man, and there's nothing wrong. There is no labor that is not noble in some way. Just do the job. Remember in 1 John, the 8th chapter, or not 8th chapter, 3rd chapter, verse 17, it says, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?" Somebody comes to the congregation and says, "I've got a need, I've got a real problem." It wasn't easy, I'm sure, for them to just come to the congregation. And we shouldn't make it something that we just say, "Here, well, whatever." I think that when that happens over time, if it happens more than once, we have to begin saying, "Well, what's the problem here? Can we talk to you a little bit about and discuss your situation a little more closely?" With the intent to help. Matthew, the 25th chapter, verses 37 through 40. "Then the righteous will answer him, saying, 'Lord, Lord, when did you see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?' And the king will answer and say to them, 'Assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me.'" Helping people is part of the Lord's work. He says, "The poor you have with you." Remember whenever the alabaster box is broken on the Lord? And he said, "The poor you have with you at all times, and you can help them whenever you want. This woman has done a good work. She has prepared my body for burial." You can help the poor and should help the poor whenever you want. Needs need to be met whenever possible, whenever they're presented. But say in the local congregation where I'm at, it just simply hasn't happened. People have wanted to help. In fact, another brother named Leroy Inman, not the one that was mentioned earlier today, Brother Leroy Inman, I don't know if any of you know him or not, he's a bachelor farmer, he's gone now. But he was getting older and older and older, and the little class, one of the classes in the side, one of the, we call it a young adult class, but I'm the youngest adult, so I don't know if it's well named. But that class wanted to do something. So we decided that Leroy Inman was needing help. And so we got together groceries, bachelor, got together groceries, and we put them in his car. And the next Sunday, we had more groceries, and his car was locked. So we left them on the hood. And the next Sunday, he came around hunting people. Said, "I don't know who's doing this, but I don't need any help. I do not need help. Stop it." And we did, but it was reluctant. I'm not telling you that because of anything other than the fact that people want to help. If you are in need, people do want to help. And the idea is loving one another, caring for one another. You know, if we're supposed to love one another, hearing you know you're a disciple, you care about each other, you love one another, what's that mean? What is love? It's actions, isn't it? It's not emotion. It's what you do that demonstrates the love. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. He didn't just stay there and feel emotion towards us, but rather that love that we recognize God gave to us because of what he gave, what he did. We do the same thing. Brethren do care, and they do want to help. If you don't want to approach the whole congregation, you could talk to someone that you trust and see if they could help you. I'm sure that they would. Romans, the 12th chapter and verse 13. One of the things it says is distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. But talking about love, Romans, the 13th chapter and verse 10. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. Does no harm. You're helping people. That is what love is deeds and not just talk. It's not saying, "Be ye warmed and filled." What about the accountability of funds that is given to or from the church treasury? Should we hold people that get the funds from the church treasury accountable for them? I don't know how to say it, but no, I don't think so. What criticism I think you hear, and I think it's kind of self-regulating, is, you know, evangelist or someone, or, you know, they shouldn't be spending the Lord's money on that nice a car. They shouldn't have, you know something, if they really are being excessive, they're going to hear about it. There's always somebody that's going to say something and question it. And if they're really and truly trying to live in a right way, they'll be careful about appearances, if nothing else. But no, we should not hold the people accountable that have the Lord's money, because you've got the Lord's money too. And you remember the parable of the unjust steward? He says, if you have been faithful in your use of the unrighteous mammon, if you've been unfaithful, what shall the reward be for those? I'm not quoting that correctly. It's in Luke, the 16th chapter here. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you've not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? We need to be careful with what we do with our money. And the Lord is looking at how we use it individually, and he's also watching the church to see that the church is using it correctly. So say the church funds, when they're given, they're given. The evangelists, those that are working, preaching, however they use the money, is entirely up to them. What they have in their wallet from the church is no more the Lord's money, it is the Lord's money, than what you got in your paycheck from wherever you work. It's all the Lord's money. Remember, Paul says in Philippians, the 4th chapter and verse 10, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He says, nevertheless, you have done well that you shared in my distress. Verse 16, for even in Thessalonica you sent aid once and again for my necessities. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. Indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the thing sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. And my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. I have no idea what any evangelist makes. I don't know. And I don't really want to know. What they make from the local congregation. There may be brethren that send funds. It's a gift. I just don't understand the kind of thinking I've heard in the local congregation in Bloomfield. Man's gone now, but he said, I don't believe any preacher ought to make more money than I do. I don't understand that. Why do you care? We shouldn't be trying to compare ourselves. There is a worry, I know, that sometimes people that are doing the preaching are somehow, in some way, not earning it? I don't know. How could that be? Do we love or not? Let me get to the last two questions. Is bankruptcy an option for the Christian? The reason a person would go into bankruptcy is because they have too many bills. They can't pay them. They don't have the resources to pay them. And of course, the idea of a bankruptcy is that you can relieve some or all of your debt depending on a lot of things. But the real fundamental core of this question is, You owe something to somebody. You have taken something from them, whether it be a service or some property. And now, through bankruptcy, you're saying, I have whatever it is, and I don't owe you anything for it. Or I will give you far less than what you are owed for it. And I don't know, I think it's probably a self-answering thing to think, should a Christian do that? Bankruptcy may be a way to start over in the sense that you've got a little relief. And I think that for a person that absolutely is drowning in debt, I don't know what the circumstances would be or why. You have to know just what the specific issues are. I do know of a man, he's a farmer in the area, whose wife died of cancer. He was a farmer, and he made his living farming, and his wife's medical bills were tremendous. He didn't declare bankruptcy. I don't know what he did. As far as I know, he's still paying the bill. I think that's a more noble way to deal with things. It's a way to show the world that we are going to be good. Our word is good. And it may be that a person could go bankrupt and start again, but still with the intent that they're going to do whatever they can to pay back what's owed. I'd say that if pressed, yes, bankruptcy is an option, but only under certain, I would think, extreme circumstances, and again with the idea that you would pay back to the very best of your ability. You know, it's one thing for brethren to forgive loans. Like, we're told that really we ought to. Somebody borrows money from you and they can't pay it back, forget it. Let it go, if you can. But it's another thing for somebody in the world that you owe money to say, well, now, you ought to forgive me that. What did Christ say about people like that? Didn't he say in the first part of Matthew, he said, agree with your adversary quickly, because if you don't, he's going to throw you into prison and you will stay there until you've paid the uttermost, the very last penny. That's how the world is going to treat us. Why would we ask or expect them to forgive us the debts? I think we ought to take care of them if we can. Do what we can. That's all we really can do. And so then, final question, how far should the church go to keep someone out of bankruptcy? Bankruptcy is a very personal thing, and generally speaking, people that are in bankruptcy don't go into bankruptcy because they owe a few thousand dollars. Usually people go into bankruptcy because they just simply cannot pay the tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars that are owed. You imagine a congregation then turning around saying, well, you have an immediate need. I don't want you to go bankrupt. And so the congregation itself, the treasurer, and everyone else in the congregation goes bankrupt to keep you out of bankruptcy. Wouldn't that be... You sure would love them, wouldn't you? They say it's a personal obligation. And we ought to be, and that's what the Lord wants us to be, is, he says, stand fast, quit you like men. Take control. Don't depend on other people. Take control. But as I say, if you've got something that needs to be dealt with, and it's an emergency, there's nothing wrong with asking the congregation for help, from what I read in the scriptures. Because as brethren, we are supposed to care for each other. But the care that we have for each other as brethren is just a shadow of the care that God has for us. 1 Peter the 5th chapter, verse 7 says, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. If you need something, and I meant to make these points, so I'll just make them quickly. If you have a need, you ought to see if you can take care of it yourself somehow, some way, finding some resources to do it, or go to your family next, then can go to the church. But again, it's not something that's intended to be permanent. Only as you have needs. Not that you think that your furniture looks a little worn. You have needs. We're talking, he says water. He says food. He says clothes. See a brother that's naked, destitute, that's where you help them. All of that and more we give as brethren need. But what does God offer us? Jesus said, "In my Father's house are many mansions." Mansions. I'm satisfied with just a cottage below? Maybe. I know we say, "I'm satisfied with just a cottage below." Some of us don't have cottages. Nothing wrong with that. But Jesus says mansions are waiting for us. He is going to give us Godhood. He is going to let us be joint heirs with Christ. And if you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God, and yet you have never confessed that before anyone, and you're living your life still in an unsaved state, don't wait. Now's an opportunity. I'm going to conclude the lesson with this invitation. Anyone outside of the Lord, anyone that has a need, won't you come forward? There is much help waiting for you as we stand and sing the invitation.